You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan!
Thank you. Please stay seated. Hey, y'all. Today's guest is star of the National Company of Hello, Dolly, three-time Tony nominee, Carolee Carmello.
Yes, God! You're not going to give me grief for saying that.
I'll allow it.
Thank you.
Anyway, Carolee Carmello is like a god with that crazy voice that defies categorization.
Is she a soprano? Is she a belter? I don't know.
She's a belter.
But I mean, she's everything.
True. Carolee came in to chat about the Godspell movie soundtrack.
LOL.
Seriously.
We barely mentioned it.
There was just so much to say.
And that was before we caught her Dolly.
That is true.
All right, let's talk about it.
Let's go in, honey. Let's put our hand in there.
Before the parade passes by. It only takes a moment.
Yeah.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
You're looking swell, Daniel.
Thank you.
Golly gee, fellas. We saw Carolee as Dolly Levi in the national tour in their stop in Hartford, Connecticut a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. What was the theater name? Do you remember?
Don't remember. Yeah. And it's not there anymore anyway.
It was
there on the road for the next year. Was the theater crazy?
It felt lawless there. Like, none of the ushers knew what to do. They were kind of just, like, going rogue.
That's true, they were.
They were like, I don't know. Like, your seat's right down there, and it, like, wasn't.
Anyway. But, you know, in fairness, like, ushers just can't win with me.
What do you mean?
I'm pretty much annoyed no matter what an usher does.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, so, I don't even want to, like...
However, the snack bar, is that what you call it, concessions? Everything was very cheap at the snack bar, I felt.
Well, listen, they're saving money on good ushers.
That's true. I mean, I feel like...
Who are we? We're starting our review of Carolee Carmello and Hello, Dolly.
We have to start
talking
the
about the ushers.
We're taking the whole journey.
We're taking the whole journey. Okay.
But I feel like when you go to, like, you know, the Barrymore Theater in New York, a Coke is, like, $8. And there it was, like, $4, which is still
weirdly,
a lot.
Weirdly, I bought nothing at the Barrymore when we saw The Inheritance.
Oh, yeah, same.
Not a t-shirt, not a lapel pin, not a Diet Coke, not even a water.
Yeah.
Although I did take a couple of napkins from the bar, not realizing how cute they were, just because I wanted to wipe my nose with them in case I sneezed during the show. So I had them all crumbled up. No, I like the tears glistening down my cheeks in case anyone saw me.
It's very Judy Garland in that one photo. You know the one.
Don't.
You know the one. The one with her crying. It's, like, real close-up, shadowy. It's, like, a famous photograph.
Did you draw it?
No.
I'm picturing your drawing of it.
My drawing?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, back to Carolee.
What do you call it?
My illustration?
Your illustration.
Digital illustration.
So
anywho.
Okay, ushers, blah, 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 blah.
Carolee.
The seats were, I would say, medium comfortable.
The seats sucked. I mean, no leg.
Well, we had very good seats.
But there was a drain in the floor, which was nice.
Especially for me with all those bottles of God knows what, you know.
Yeah, so we were good seats, though. Like, fifth row back, maybe, orchestra center.
Oh, my God. Do you realize, based on how much time we're talking about this stuff, we're going to have to talk for, like, 4 hours about the show.
And I would be happy to do
that.
Okay. We could have a full episode.
Let's do it.
Only Dolly. Anyway, so, of course, Dolly's entrance, they don't keep us waiting. They're so generous. Dolly Levi comes out on that train within the first 4 minutes of the show. Puts down that newspaper, Dolly Levi, born Gallagher.
Yeah.
The crowd goes wild. And in Hartford, Connecticut, that means about 20 people applauded for Carolee.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's tricky. I mean, that, you know, that's part of why the show is like such a like celebrity vehicle. Because it's like, you really like want that effect, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you have somebody that's like just known for their talent, mm-hmm. you know, in theater. Mm-hmm. They have to earn that.
Right.
You know, so they get it act two mm-hmm. or even, like, you know, 10 minutes later.
Right.
But they don't get, you know, that... Oh, someone like Bette Midler or even Bernadette Peters mm-hmm. gets a kind of a star entrance that you can't, there's just no way to make that happen
right,
for Carol Lee.
Right, right. But
I wonder what it was like. I mean, I saw Carol Channing do it in 1994.
All right, humble brag.
And it was spectacular, but obviously, you know, the audience was going to see Carol Channing in Hello, Dolly. She was a huge, huge star already at that mm-hmm. point. And so, well, at least as far as she was associated with that role for so many decades. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, like, in 64... Like, she was a star, but she was not a top, top flight Broadway star. Right. She had done Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. She had replaced Roz Russell in Wonderful Town.
Yeah. Who would be the equivalent of her, of that nowadays, like, with that career?
Well, it's hard to compare nowadays because now everyone is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Like, today, like now, like, Patty and Bernadette don't have that much more than, like, Carol Channing had. Like, the thing is that there really aren't an Ethel Merman or Mary Martin today.
Right,
but I guess if you transpose all that, like, to make the equivalent...
I mean, I'm thinking, like Katrina Link or, like...
No. Mueller. I feel like she'd be bigger than that. Gentlemen for Blondes was a big hit, mm-hmm. and it was, like, her thing. Like, I feel like it would be more like... I don't know. It's very hard to compare. TV and film is such a big factor.
Right.
Like, But anyway, whatever that moment was in 1964 for Carol Channing, you know... The audience wasn't where Daniel and I were on excitement level, but right. they got there. Because within the first song, It Takes a Woman.
Yes, honey.
She, sure? I put my hand in.
Yeah.
Carol Lee was just dazzling. I mean, she just has, you know, such musical comedy oomph.
Mm-hmm.
Her voice just pours out with, like, limitless reserves
it's
of, like richness.
Wow, I didn't know Dolly, like, I didn't know these songs could be sung that way, you know? She makes it her own.
Because even if you listen to, like, if you listen, well, Barbara doesn't sing that song in the movie.
Right. She places it with,
the also fabulous song, Just Leave Everything to Me. But even the other songs that Barbara does sing, Barbara's voice is so weirdly Barbara
yeah.
that, like, it's, like, hard to even compare it to somebody else singing it, yeah. you know? And, like, who else is, like, a real belter that has, like, recorded that? Like, Ethel Merman, like, a little bit? Like, although, yeah. does she even sing that song?
Marilyn May.
Yeah, like, I don't know. They're old school. You know, yeah. Carol Lee has, even though it's a real musical theater voice, it has a modern quality to it.
Yes, yes.
So it really is just a really unique and refreshing and, like, deeply satisfying
yeah.
take on yeah. the score.
100%.
Starting right at the top. I mean, that's the thing about Carol Lee's voice. I mean, I actually saw her, by the way, once in a reading of a mm-hmm. bio musical about Merman,
mm.
Where she played Merman and sang all Merman songs. And it's, even though they're so different, it mm-hmm. actually is an apt analogy
right.
because, like Merman, I think Carol Lee has that quality that yeah. just, like, completely even. Like, her voice from absolute top
yes.
to absolute bottom. Not only that there's not a break, but there, any note you hear Carol Lee sing, you would think, well, that's dead center of her voice.
Yeah, and you
like,
know it's Carol Lee.
There's just never any sense of, like, being anywhere near the limit of the range.
Right, right.
Or even, like, the breath.
Right, right. And it's all there. Like, even her speaking voice, the first line, Dolly Levi Born Gallagher, you can hear the resonance in that voice. And
oh, totally.
Pierces the darkness of the theater.
Yes. The darkness in the universe.
Cuts you to the quick.
Carol Lee is the big bang of belters.
Yes, 100%.
And, and she's just so charming and likable and, like, you just, I mean, you know, if there's not that celebrity entrance of a Bette Midler,
mm-hmm.
there's just, she immediately is that.
Right.
Because you really, I mean, I think I can say this more than any, I mean, I saw Bette 4 times, mm-hmm. and I saw Bernadette 2 times, mm-hmm. and I saw Donna, and I saw Betty, and as I mentioned, I saw Carol Channing. But I feel like this is the first time I've seen a Dolly who, it just seems like the entire company is so, like, in love with her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just a love fest in the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? Maybe, like, she's actually, like, secretly a bitch and they all,
no,
like, hate her.
I could
but
not.
You just know that's not true. I mean,
no, no, no.
Even when we...
We went back
even
and
when we wait, brag, humble brag. When we went backstage and talked to her after the show in
no
her dressing
deal.
Room. But, like, she immediately, like, took us all on this tour and, like, everybody was just so, like... wanting to, like, they weren't like, oh, it's the star, like, get
they were
out of
all
her
like
way.
Wanting to they talk were, with her, like, and, like they, talk about their kids.
They
ask
all
her about her.
Clearly just like are just like so into her, you know.
And even what was that one twink was like, oh my god, he was like, I loved it. You guys were applauding so much for Carol Lee throughout the whole show, so he could like see us and hear us just going wild.
I mean,
for her.
Daniel's like, you know, beating around the bush. Basically, we were like the only two gay people in Hartford, except the ones on the stage.
Yes, we were the-
but you know, I
and on stage there was nothing but gay people.
Nothing but gays,
yeah. and Carol Lee.
Okay, so before we go back into the rest of Carol Lee's performance, yes. Do we want to say anything about the rest of the company?
I will say I loved
Irene Malloy.
Yes. I mean, first of all, that
What's
is...
her name? Annalise... I'll look it up.
Yeah, I'll look it up. You know, I've always kind of thought of that as a thankless role, because it's just like you get the one song, and it's kind of just like a filler song, and then...
And in fairness, part of what was great about Kate Baldwin on Broadway... Mm-hmm. Is that with like all the hullabaloo that was going on with like mm-hmm. Bette Midler and, mm-hmm. all, and the gays and everything? Right. Kate Baldwin was like no freaking nonsense.
Yes, well,
like,
that's
and
why
it
I
really
love.
Worked for the character. Yes. But you know, she just sort of like dispensed with the moments and right. you know, and as thrillingly as she sang Ribbons Down My Back, yes. Or as sexy as she was about it, it was very much like. Get beat to beat to beat to beat to beat.
Driving.
And it was actually then surprising when she was moving in, It Only Takes a Moment mm-hmm. in the end. Mm-hmm. But this was a little bit of a different take on it, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and she acted the fuck out of it. It's like, she really did have kind of that feistiness, but she also had a deep, humanity, and you know, you could see her falling in love with, Cornelius, which, you know, took some acting because he was obviously a gay man. But
what are you implying?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just saying if it were high school, they'd be going to the prom together, you know.
That's so my life.
But I loved her so much. Like, I was thinking I want her to replace Katrina as Bobby and Company.
Whoa.
Like, I thought she was so wonderful, and she was just such a good actress and so committed to the journey of Irene.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you that her name is... What is wrong? Why is this, like, not readily findable? I'm so embarrassed. Keep talking.
Wasn't it, like...
Annalisa Leeming.
What else has she been in?
She was in... You're going to ask me that, too.
No, you told me what she was in when we were there.
Well, I realized... I think I saw her in Dolly with Betty Buckley and loved her, too.
Oh, okay.
But the year in the role... She's not somebody that, like, got bored. I think she just went even deeper.
Yeah.
And her singing is gorgeous and thrilling. She actually kind of has a little bit of a quality reminiscent of Florence Lacey, mm-hmm. who played the part in both Carol Channing revivals, the one in mm-hmm. 78 mm-hmm. and the one in 94.
Right.
I don't know if this is okay to say. She's, I think, maybe more beautiful than Florence. Although, in fairness, I didn't see Florence in 78. Like, I'm sure, like, she was quite a looker.
And I will say, this Irene looks like she's very pretty, but in, like, a very unique way. And she looks like the exact halfway midpoint, physically, the exact midpoint between Julie Andrews and Carol Burnett.
Yes.
She's like, they're like lesbian love child.
Blow my mind. Yeah. They're not lesbians.
Just kidding.
We at Broken Records don't wish to make any statements, true or false, about sexual dynamics that didn't happen or didn't happen between Carol Burnett and Julie Andrews.
Although that could be a wonderful show. Broken Just Records presents.
A deep dive, if
and
you
Annalisa
will.
Leeming in.
Julie and Carol.
Julie
loving
and Carol.
Loving thyselves.
Yeah.
But anyway, loved Annalisa, and the rest of the cast was really...
really good.
Really good. And John Bolton was great as... what's his name?
Horace, yeah. Everyone, like, the whole company, especially... All the waiters and, you know, they have so much to do. They were just so energetic. And even when we went back afterwards, they were all, like, just so positive.
Well, they all seem about 22.
And, I mean, they're all 22. Like, I felt like a
I feel like normally when you see Hello, Dolly and, like, like Cornelius and Barnaby are like about to sing the best song in the world,
put on your Sunday clothes.
And they're talking, and he's like, I'm 32 years old, I've got to get out and see the world. And Barnaby's like, he's like, well, I'm only, 19? It's not so urgent for me.
17 or 19?
So super young. And normally you're like, okay, grandpa, because it's usually some fucking old queen who's, like, been playing the part since, like, the last revival, you know? Yeah. And this is the first time where, like, when he said, like, I'm 30 years old, I've got to see the world, you're like, you might be, like, late 20s. Yeah, like, let me see some ID, son. And absolutely, like, Barnaby was like, I'm, like, you know, 14, and you're like, I buy it.
Right.
Yeah. The whole thing was like Twink City. I mean, I feel like the company is like fresh out of AMDA. Yeah. Like on leave, going back to like finish their like 2-semester AMDA program 100%, next year.
100%. Like doing homework after the show.
Yeah. But really, the show is the best homework, I've always said. It's, you know, you learn by doing.
You learn by experience.
Yes. So back to our experience.
Back to Carolee. You said something about her musical comedy chops.
Yeah.
And something that struck me was how, and not just because of the red hair, but how there was a lot of Lucille Ball in her performance. It was, like, very, especially during the dinner scene where she sits at that table and just, you know.
Totally. It's funny you say Lucille Ball because I just saw her at Encores a couple years ago in, I forget what the evening was called. It was, like,
oh, yeah, the
it was
like 30 minutes.
Yeah, she did Wildcat.
Well, no, it was Look Me Over. Hey, Look Me Over.
That was the name of the evening because that's her song from Wildcat.
Yes.
But it was all like, it was only like a 35 or 25 minute chunk. And then there was like a Mac and Mabel chunk. Mm-hmm. And there was a Sail Away. Was it Sail Away? It was BeBe Neuwirth playing Alien Stretch Part. It had to be Sail Away. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why I don't remember it being Sail Away.
Unless it was.
No, it was freaking Sail Away. It wasn't Goldilocks. It wasn't Goldilocks. Anyway. But, moving on with Carolee.
Well, during her, that little scene where she's eating at the table, you know, all the little, the oysters or whatever she's eating.
Dumplings.
Dumplings. She, so Lucille Ball and so, Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally. And I told her that after, I was like, the way you the food acting you were doing in that moment was.
This is deep for Danielle.
Was so Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally.
It
was
no
so
greater
funny.
Compliment. Okay, so just going back to like get through like the show piece by piece because we said like I put my hand in there,
ribbons on my back.
Well, so but let's just say for
put on your Sunday clothes.
No disrespect to any of the other great ladies who played the part,
right?
But like you know, I believe Bette Midler's Hella Dolly was like musical theater magic. Like I've rarely been so ecstatic. However, Carolee did not need to resort to like adding a comedic Irish jig to avoid some of like the high notes in the boys' key of "Put on Your Sunday Clothes." What's the part with that? You know?
Oh, you mean as Bette did?
Yeah. How does it go? That Sunday shine is a like, but how'd you feel as fine as you look?
When you feel down.
And Carolee just gives you like, that you feel as fine as you look.
Yeah. That does turn into a little, it's a
but
little
But they all navigated it, you know, like whether you're, it doesn't matter if you're Bette Midler, Bernadette, whatever, you know, it's, that song is the boys' song and like, maybe it does modulate for them, but it's still not, it's not a moment about, even if it's in their key, those bitches are in their 70s and they've got bigger fish to fry than singing one line in this fakakta group number, you know? That's like, is Jennifer Samard in it? I'm not belting.
Right.
So, but Carolee's like, if I'm there, I'm belting.
If I'm there, honey, the note's there.
The note's there. So it was there. And but anyway, that number is, I mean, that has been for me all these times I've seen Hella Dolly.
Oh, God.
When they slam that basement
that door, honey,
door down.
Tomatoes.
And that stunt out there.
Yeah.
There's a world outside of Yonkers. I mean, it just like, it just, you can't not be filled with joy.
Yeah.
And like, it just so exciting and energizing. I mean, it really is. It's something I didn't realize about Hello Dolly. All the years that I was like a musical theater lover, obsessing about all these different musicals, and I knew that I loved Jerry Herman, and I would listen to like Jerry's Girls, and to have like Andrea McArdle and Leslie Uggams belting out these songs of his one after the other, and of course Carol Channing, you know, I was just completely obsessed, and I would listen to the Mac and Mabel album, and you know, that in some ways was my favorite Bernadette, even as much or more than Sunday in the Park with George, you know,
yeah.
And And MAME for Angela. Well, Dear World actually is my favorite Angela album.
Absolutely.
But Hello Dolly, you know, and I loved Carol Channing, but it wasn't something I was into in that same way of listening to.
Mm-hmm.
But when I watch the show, it's such a perfectly crafted musical. And the moments, you know, they up the ante of mm-hmm. the energy and the mm-hmm. joy and, like,
joy, yeah.
the inevitable. It's so, I mean, if you describe the plot of Hello Dolly, I mean, like, what's the climax?
So weird,
it's just
yeah.
an old lady going to a restaurant she hasn't been to in a long time.
Yeah, which, I mean,
but,
for
like,
us.
It's so brilliantly constructed to just, like, inevitably pull you toward
yeah.
that, like, that release of her coming down those stairs yeah. and being celebrated like
right.
that, you know?
Well, and speaking of Jerry Herman, I have this playlist that I listen to in the mornings to kind of get me in the mood to, you know, go out in the world before the parade passes by. And the top three songs that are on there are It's Today from MAME.
Yeah.
Put On Your Sunday Clothes from Dolly. And then,
Put A Little More Mascara On from Lacoste.
No, but I should add that one. Dear World, Each Tomorrow Morning.
Oh, I love that.
Because it's all, you know, it's just like,
when I first wake up and look in the glass.
Yeah. Pull your teeth out of the glass.
And she's like, there's no long lost star. I love it so much.
Oh,
no,
God.
But don't come for Angela's belting on that album, because
I
when
shan't.
She sings Kiss Her Now, that is like, I don't
yes.
think Patty could sing that better.
Well, and then, and even,
and of course, I don't want to know.
Stuff. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
But I feel like by the time she recorded Dear World, like, mm-hmm. I feel like MAME, she was still a little bit like, I'm not really a singer,
yeah,
like, musical theater people, but I'll do my best
yeah,
and
yeah,
belt
yeah.
it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I feel like Dear World, she was like, keep it in B flat, but I'm willing to go up to a C sharp only on the last note and only for the album.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that's not, she would never say only for the album. I bet Angie, whatever she did, it was 8 shows a week, bitch.
Yeah. Maybe she's a workhorse.
Yeah.
I was just watching Murder, She Wrote last night, and I was like, you know what? She did 24, as a 60, however old she was at the time, she did 24, 26 episode seasons, 12 seasons of Murder, She Wrote. And she wanted to stop because it was a lot of work and she didn't need the money. But she was employing so much of her friends and family that she kept doing it after, like, you know, whatever season they wanted her. Anyway,
do I need to, like, have a Murder, She Wrote moment?
Not really. I mean, I go in and out.
I've, like, honestly,
it's not something,
like, I've seen it, like, a few times for a few minutes when my grandparents would, like, watch it, like, mm-hmm. while I played video games or something.
Watching Jessica.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, as embarrassed as I am to say this, it's hard for me to follow the plot sometimes just because I, like, you know, my attention span. But it is so comforting just seeing Angela on screen, like, cooking in her little Cabot Cove kitchen and, like, inviting.
Is that why Rue is so into it?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Rue is just, like, such an old lady at heart that he, like, loves, like, his mystery stories, you know? Because he talks about, like, yeah. loving, like, Mission
but,
Impossible.
But, no, but, like, the idea of having it on, like, for, like, comfort in the dressing
yes.
room and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
Just,
same thing
like,
with
Angela
Golden
cooking
Girls.
Or whatever.
I mean, that's why I love it, is because she is just such, like, a comforting, grounding energy for me. That I love, you know, there's so many wonderful guest stars. I mean, Lorna Luft has been in several episodes. Mary Wicks was
George
in one
Hearn.
Recently. George Hearn.
I'm definitely having a Mary Wicks moment right now.
Yes, yes.
So, back to Carolee.
Back to Carolee. We have to wind down.
We have to wrap it up. So, Before the Parade Passes By.
Wonderful. Let's talk about Before the Parade.
I think it's safe to say she's my favorite version
mm-hmm,
of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, just... She really,
yeah.
She gives it to you.
She gives it to you, and it's. I mean, I love before her. My favorite was Bernadette, just because I felt Bernadette gave it such pathos.
I mean, I'll give you that the Bernadette version hurt. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I loved Bernadette in the role, and I loved her version of that song.
But
although
Carolee.
I think before Carolee, my favorite was Betty Buckley.
Uh-huh.
It's because Betty had this moment that I had never noticed in the show, which is like, I think it's in the middle of the song,
mm-hmm.
like
so
during
like
one of the instrumentals,
the
where she like you see her like decide to
yes.
start doing the choreography,
mm-hmm.
and Betty, just watching Betty make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Was so rich and intense
mm-hmm.
and involving and so clear, but also, like, complicated and nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like I was really witness to this, like, human, like, transformative moment that the character had, which, like, I never would have thought would be in this show. And it just informed her performing the rest of the song. And then, and I have to say, I mean, and Betty really belted the fuck out of it, too. Mm. I mean, I was really thrilled by Betty's voice in that song. So maybe I'll say Carolee's Tide because of that. But Carolee just kind of gave me, like, from the beginning, just, like, mouth open, just, like, full. I mean, she is a parade, you know, and I just want to march in it.
March in it, honey. We're going to wave that banner high. We've got a goal again.
Gotta drive again.
Gotta drive again.
All right. I can feel my heart. Is that what it is?
Feel my heart coming alive again. I've had too much coffee.
But, honestly, the same thing with So Long, Dearie.
Oh, yes, which I will say that song has become, again, just like, you know, the Irene Ribbons Down My Back. That's another song I never really cared about in the recordings, but, like, seeing these women perform So Long, Dearie, it becomes this huge staple of the show for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that song, once you see the show, you're like, oh, like, that's up there with, like, you know, and The Man That Got Away. Because it's just, like, I mean, there's so much going on in Hello, Dolly, and, like, actually she doesn't have that many songs, especially, like, proper, like solos. And that's, like, her, I guess, like, 11 o'clock number.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it's, yeah, it definitely is, like, when you just are listening to the album, you wouldn't necessarily, like, add it to your, like, number one, like, show tunes favorite belt, songs, belt list. But you definitely do put it there.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And I really wish I had a recording of Carolee singing all the
Me
songs.
Me too. Yeah. I wish they would do, like, you know, didn't, like, they did, like,
an EP.
Yeah, didn't it, like, Pearl Bailey, didn't they record a thing with her?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I wish they would do an EP with all, like, all the Dolly singing different songs. Like, you know,
it's probably in Beth's contract that can never happen.
True. Betty could sing I Put My Hand In.
Oh, mixing it up? No, they each have to get all the biggest.
No. I want each one of them singing
no,
one song.
No, that's terrible.
Let's go through it. Betty could sing I Put My Hand In.
No, I will Donna play. Could sing. I will play Your Mary Fuck Hill, but I will not assign one song to one woman and the others not.
Okay, well, on that note, let's talk to Carolee.
Broken record. Carolee Carmello, we are so fucking excited to have you.
Goddess Carolee Carmello.
Oh my goodness, thank you.
I was telling Daniel it's so weird to have you because I'm such a huge fan of yours. Same. And I feel like you're someone who truly doesn't give a crap about any of that stuff. You know, like...
about fans or about...
No, I mean, I'm sure you're, like, loving and grateful to your fans. But, like, I, you know, just... Like, you and I were talking over email, you're not obsessed with theater and music and individual singers or show tunes, or it's like you don't seem mystified by that whole thing. It doesn't have, like, a magic.
Well, and you started out, you went to school for business, is that right?
Yes,
so
that's
you
true.
Never, your dream was never to come to Broadway and do theater.
Well,
and
now,
like
now
that.
We're telling you how you feel. Well, correct us.
Broadway found you, you know, it's like we needed your gift, and so Broadway said, you know, please come.
Well, it was. Yeah, it was a weird little transition from college business degree to, you know, life in the theater in New York City. Because, like you said, I didn't plan it. And it just sort of happened a little ass backwards because I was doing some community theater stuff during college. And then I got offered this job the summer after I graduated, which was an equity theater. And I was forced to make this decision about whether or not to join Actors Equity, which for people who don't know is the union that actors who work in the theater have to join in order to be able to work in really professional settings. So I remember standing in my mother's living room where I was at the time and talking to this producer, and he was explaining to me what Actors Equity was, and I had no idea, which... You know, when I tell people that story who are actors who went to school for it, they're like, oh, my God, I worked for 5 years to get my equity card. So they're really pissed off about it.
Sorry.
Sorry about it. But, yeah, I was sort of at this crossroads, and I realized, do I want to pursue this professionally? Because he was explaining to me at the time that if I just wanted to continue doing community theater, which I was doing during college, that I really shouldn't join the union because then you're not allowed to do that kind of amateur theater. And I was like, what?
Had you thought you would do that? Like, when you thought about your future as this, like, businesswoman, you know, not working professionally in the theater, did you always imagine that you would keep doing community theater?
Not really.
But you obviously had a love for it that I enjoyed made you it. Do it. Because yeah. you had no ambition about it. You were just doing it for fun, right?
Yeah, it was really just like my outlet during school, you
Did
know?
People come to you and say, like, you have a talent, you have a voice that we need on the stage? Like, was that something you were known for as a
Not really.
Young...
Well, I mean... you were playing leads.
In my cafeteria at my dorm, yes.
But I mean, a lot of people were in the ensemble.
Well, right. I suppose that's true. It's all relative, isn't it? and when I was 19, I tried out for my first professional job, which paid me $19 a week doing Maria in The Sound of Music.
Oh.
So then I was like, oh, I'm making money at this. This is interesting.
Well, I'm completely obsessed with your whole, like, secret closeted soprano past. because you played Amalia and She Loves Me, isn't that right?
Yeah.
I mean,
wow.
All these, like, everyone's like, oh, the greatest belter. Right, but, right. like, I mean, you, I guess maybe Judy Kuhn is in that category, too, but... It's so, I mean, nowadays a lot of these girls do both, but they don't really do the belting in that same. I mean, you give like a real old school
belt,
earthy, you know, roof shaking belt and play these legitimate soprano roles.
I guess it was born out of necessity just to find work. And I remember auditioning for She Loves Me, and I was going to be equally happy if I had gotten one of the other parts, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I think the first time I ever was really tested with that soprano thing that you're talking about was when I did the first national tour of Les Mis, and I was covering Cosette and Fantine, which was a different track. They changed the track a little bit because
This is the strangest thing.
Didn't know there was a
I think it's Cameron McIntosh calling.
Yeah, they want you. Wow.
Ben rips that phone out of the wall.
I'm sorry, she's unavailable. So what do you mean the cover was a different track?
So when the show opened on Broadway, they had, you know, the understudy tracks set up. So the, I guess the Fantine cover, who was more of a belter, did not also cover Cosette because those voices are not usually the same person.
Yeah.
So I remember at the audition them sort of vocalizing me up because I didn't sing anything soprano-y. And they were like, what about this? Can you go this high? Can you go this? Because Cosette has like a high C at the end of Act 1 or something. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that.
So had you taken no voice lessons?
Yeah, I know, and I never have.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
But you still had, I mean, in those community theater shows, like, I don't know, the musical director was warming up the cast and you were standing there going like, la, 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 oh, I can do that. I mean, you had some sense of your,
I think the sense I had of it was more from like singing along with Julie Andrews, you know, or singing along to other kind of recordings or shows, and I know that's your thing. We're going to talk about recordings.
So you bring up Julie Andrews. Obviously, yes. I mean, all of America, the whole world grew up with that Sound of Music, but when I would watch the Sound of Music, I mean, I would get to a certain point singing along where I was like, no, I got it. But you just kept going.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I ever was that conscious of it. I was just trying to sound like her, and, you know, I guess that was my voice lesson, was listening to her, because I never really had anybody teach me.
What were technique. The other ones like that?
That were soprano-y like that?
Well, or either. I mean, were you listening to Funny Girl also, or, you know?
No, I don't think I was aware of any of that stuff when I was a kid.
Or the pop music? What were the albums or singers?
I don't think. Sorry, I'm on the wrong podcast. No, I think my exposure to musical theater really was television, because back then they would play, you know, the movie of Sound of Music, the movie of Music Man.
Music Man, more soprano. Did you ever play
1776.
That part?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
I love that. I love that.
It's really the dark secret soprano bass.
Right, it's coming out.
She's just dropping these like nothing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Okay, sorry. Sound of Music, Music Man.
1776 was on TV once a year. West Side Story movie was on, mm-hmm, you know.
And you always wanted to be Maria, not Anita?
I don't know that I
did
really
you ever
even
play
identify
either of those parts?
No.
No.
I don't think I identified at that point in my life wanting to do any of it. It just was kind of an interesting, different thing on TV. I mean, back then you didn't have YouTube. You didn't have cable channels.
No,
where
it was
you could
when it
watch.
Was on. It was on.
Yeah,
right,
that's
right.
It. You just watched it. And I was like, this is different.
He
telling
doesn't
a
know.
Story.
He
well, he's 14.
but so would you sing with both parts in West Side Story?
I guess so. Yeah. We had the album of West Side Story movie, mm-hmm, which of course is...
It's like all Marnie Nixon,
not
right?
Yet. I think she sang Tony, too, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, exactly.
Marnie Nixon, R.I.P.
See the pretty girl in that mirror there. Who can that attractive girl be? Such a pretty face, such a pretty dress, such a pretty smile, such a pretty me. I feel stunning and entrancing, feel like running and dancing for joy, for I'm loved by a pretty, wonderful boy.
I think I just sang along with everything.
Did you have
men,
siblings?
Women. I have three younger brothers.
Ah,
yes.
Oh, the older sister. Okay, very Maria. That's Fräulein Maria.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Now they want
having
her for
all
West
those
Side
younger
Story.
Children.
That must be what that call is. Yeah. Not in this room. The call's coming from inside the house. Were those any other musical movies? What are Judy Garland stuff? Like any of those old MGM kind of things?
I probably saw some of it in passing, but I don't think.
Not The Wizard of Oz. Was
oh, yeah,
deal.
Yeah. Wizard of Oz, I remember. I remember Leslie Ann Warren in that TV version of Cinderella.
Another soprano part. Mm-hmm. Got it.
In my own little corner, in my own little chair, I can be whatever I want to be. On the wings of my fancy, I can fly anywhere, and the world its arms to me.
And and so the album you want to talk about, Under Gun to Her Head, was she's like, I really don't have anything. I was like, it's fine, just come. But you said the Godspell movie soundtrack.
Yes,
which we love.
So I before coming here yesterday, I was sort of reminding myself, because I wanted to figure out, was it really the movie or was it the off-Broadway soundtrack that
mm-hmm.
I...
Because the movie was like a big bomb. Like some people like...
Was it?
A lot of people didn't even know there was a Godspell movie.
I don't remember seeing it until much later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for some reason I just was exposed to that album.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember I had a friend called Kitty. Mm-hmm. If you're out there, Kitty McKeo, hi, how are you?
Listening.
From grade school. and we would go in her basement and sing all the parts of the Godspell album.
Yeah,
and
I
like
love
jump
that.
Around her basement and, you know, climb
did you
on
ever
the furniture.
Wind up doing Godspell?
No.
How funny.
I think I'm too old now. But that would have been a fun one to do.
Well, all the performers I like are your age, so we'll do a grown-up yeah. Godspell.
The middle-aged Godspell. Yeah. Hey, everybody needs God, you know.
Everybody needs God. I mean, and that movie is so weird. It's like...
It's so weird.
Did you ever see the movie of Jacques Brel's Alive and Well Living in Paris?
No.
It's also like that, where it's like... They're singing these songs, but they're kind of just like walking around the city.
Like,
is it New York or
I think
Paris?
It's a little... It must be Paris, but I think some of it's like filmed in New York too. I mean, it's even
generic
less
cityscape.
Making sense than Godspell.
And a lot of it reminded me of Hair as well.
Hair actually takes place in right, New York City. Right. I mean, it's actually like, and like that weird thing at the end, it's so great where they're on the top of the World Trade Center singing Beautiful City.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that now, was so, of course, it's like so much
that
more
was so
you
odd to
know,
see that.
Heartbreaking.
It is.
Come sing me sweet Missouri. Come see the
So what, any favorite song in Godspell that you would sing?
The one I have the most clear memory of is All for the Best, which is that duet that Judas and Jesus
like
sing.
Like the least vocal song in the show. Like on your list of songs you wish Carly Carmelo would sing in Godspell.
It's
like the like Potter
day.
Duet for two men.
Women are sad.
All your wrongs will be redressed.
Yes, it's all for the.
You must never be distressed.
Yes, it's all for the.
Someone's got to be oppressed.
Yes, it's all for the best.
There was something about that song when I was 10 or 11 or whatever age.
It's a great song. It's
I
so
mean,
funny.
I think
and
I never heard like two melodies put together like that before, and that kind of pattery kind of lyric that tells a story.
Yeah,
and that
was
fascinating to me because I, you know, all I heard on the radio at that time was like Barry Manilow or, you know, Carole King. It wasn't, I didn't hear that kind of music. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, this is different. Sort of.
It's funny because that is the least Carole King song in Godspell, and we're also talking to Stephen Schwartz for the
podcast.
Yes,
I know.
And the album that he chose is Judy Collins' Wildflowers, and another one on his list was Laura Nyro. And it's like so much of his songs, especially the ballads, feel very much of that Carole King, Laurel Canyon era.
Day by day, day by day.
That if you were turning away from that on the radio, listen to Godspell, you would go for the like Irving Berlin style number in the show.
Yes, and the performances were so fun. It was also that thing that I had never really been exposed to of like, you know, someone acting a song, you know, and telling a story with a song as opposed to just a fun pop tune that you would hear.
Sure.
I think there was something in me that was really drawn to that. The
was that when you were like a little kid, like before you were even like doing like shows in high school?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't do shows in high school.
Oh, no.
But
started
this was
in college?
Like, yes. This was when I was like fifth grade.
And where did you grow up?
In Albany, New York.
Albany, New York, okay.
Yeah.
Not too far.
No, not too far.
So did you come to the city and see shows ever with your family or no?
It's pretty far, isn't
it? It's about 3 hours. The funny thing is, my middle school had a trip to New York to see Raisin in the Sun, and mm-hmm. I missed it. So that was my first chance to see a Broadway show that
sorry,
I missed.
Not interesting.
No, I really was. Like, it was this whole...
What do I, Carole Carmella, have to do with Broadway? Forget it.
No, it was this comedy of errors. It's a long story, but anyway, I wanted to go, but I missed the trip. And then in college, I went for the day with some friends, and the first Broadway show I ever saw was when I was in college and saw Ain't Misbehavin', mm-hmm. which is a kind of odd exposure to Broadway.
Because it's a review.
Yeah, and it wasn't anything that I was really sort of emotionally connected to. It mm-hmm. didn't have a story. Like, I ended up loving shows that had, you know, character-based, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. stories. And I think the first show that really made a huge impact on me was Evita, which I saw later on in mm-hmm. college. And
did you see Patti LuPone?
I don't think I did. You know, I don't even remember because I don't think I knew who anybody was right. at that mm-hmm. point.
But you loved the show.
I loved it. And I thought, this is, like, cooler than anything I've ever seen on TV or movies or mm-hmm. anything. It just mm-hmm. really drew me in.
Did that motivate you to, like, go buy the album or anything? Or was it just...
No.
No. Leave it at the door. And were you like, God, when we do that in the dorms, I should play that part? Or?
I don't think I understood, like, that was a possibility. Right. The first thing I ever auditioned for in the dorms was Oliver, which I think I probably was a sophomore or something. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I was, you know, 19 or something.
Had you seen the movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, once again, exposed to it by TV. I did.
I love it. Just checking off the list.
We always talk about how there's, like, two kinds of people on Broadway. Like, the ones that were obsessed with it and, like, chased it down. And the ones that were just like, ugh, fine. If you want me so badly.
Right, oh, really? Right. No.
Like you, Mary Testo is another guest we had earlier. Yeah. And, you know, she's very similar. It's like she never really had these big Broadway desires.
What did Mary want to do? I don't think we've ever talked about that.
She wants to be a rock and roll
yeah,
singer.
Yeah, she's more into oh, rock okay. music. The album she chose was Joe Cocker.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
But it also makes sense, you know, for someone like of Mary's generation growing up listening to rock and roll and seeing Broadway being so different from that, mm-hmm, that she mm-hmm. wouldn't have been, you know,
mm-hmm.
Drawn
well, she
to
and I
that.
Aren't that different in age, are we? Let me just look this
up.
Know. How old are you, Mary?
Carole, I think you're my age, so, you know.
I think she's a few years older, but yeah, I there certainly was a lot of exposure to rock and roll and pop music. When I was a kid, I just... for whatever reason, didn't grab onto it.
But still, Evita was a show that made an impression on you, and it was a more contemporary sound.
That's true.
So you loved doing Oliver, playing Nancy.
Yes, it was fun. I don't think at that point I went, oh, this is it, because mm-hmm. I didn't change my major or anything. Right. You know, it didn't impact my plans for the
but
future.
You accept as much as you decided to audition for the next show.
Yes, that's true.
It was a good experience.
It was fun. It didn't feel like a career sort of opportunity mm-hmm. was opening up. It just felt like, oh, this is like joining the, yeah. you know.
Did you enjoy that process of creating a show with a group of people and, you know, rehearsals and opening night? And
I still don't enjoy that process.
No?
No, I don't like rehearsal. I don't like creating. I like the performing, and I
yeah,
did enjoy that.
Set, yeah.
I did. I thought, oh, this is fun. Everybody comes and watches this thing, you know, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I get to do it. I don't know. We did it like four times or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That part was fun for me, and that still is fun for me to do the actual show, but mm-hmm. I'm not one of those actors who loves
the process.
Uh-huh.
So what about, uh-huh. You've done a bunch of these like high profile replacement gigs going
yes.
in now, of course, everybody's freaking out because you're going to be
Dolly Levi.
But you've done that in Mamma Mia and in Kiss Me Kate mm-hmm. and
Sister
I want to say You're in Town.
You're in Town, 1776, yes. A lot of replacements.
So,
which,
I mean,
yeah.
do you in a way, I mean, obviously you want to get the plaudits and the nominations and all that, but do you in some ways prefer that because you don't have to do the whole long drawn out process of creating it and you just come in and take
yeah,
over?
Yeah, kind of. I don't mind it at all because, you know, especially in a show that's that's starting from the ground up, like mm-hmm. You're in Town or something. You don't have to go through all the crazy, you know, changing the script every day
and figuring
out all the where the laughs are, and like someone else has figured that out for you, and you just have to learn it, which is much easier for me.
Yeah.
And not that I don't enjoy working on original stuff, because I do find that interesting. It's just not what makes me happiest, you know.
Have you done any revivals that you originated? I would think I would know the answer to this, but see, I'm just thinking maybe the best thing for Carol Lee would be to start out in a revival, because the show already works.
Right, exactly. The show is figured out.
I mean, nobody loves that. I mean, that's such, I mean, what's the thing? It's the punishment for Hitler should be to go on the road with a musical, you know, in development.
But some people do love the process of figuring out a show and rehearsing and digging into the character. And I don't, you know, look, tech rehearsals are not fun for anybody, but I think there are some actors who love the beginning of the process, and then once they get into, like, you know, the third, fourth, fifth week of a run, they're like, oh, I'm bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which
right.
is the opposite for me. Sure. I just, I like
I thought of an example. King and I at Paper Mill Playhouse.
Oh, well,
so was that, would you have preferred that somebody else rehearsed that and you replaced? Or was that good because it was already a show that worked?
That was good because it was already a show that we knew, you know, we knew it was.
Maybe you just need to be the revival queen.
I'll be happy to do that if you want to set that up for me.
I'm glad. Listen, we could dream cast you in revivals all day long.
All right. Oh, and I'm getting a little old. We only have a couple. Maybe MAME.
We'll be very happy to see MAME. I one of the tragedies of my life is I didn't see you when you did Bells Are Ringing. It was Reprise.
In L.A.
And
yeah.
I think that company is no longer now.
You know, I think it was no longer, and now I think that it's coming back.
Oh, that's
good. Yeah, I think they had some issues with their, whatever, board of directors or something, and they stopped for a few years, but I think they're starting up again. It's sort of like the Encores series is in New York, but they do it in L.A. And that was so much fun. What a fun part that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really had a good time with that. But again, it's one of those things like Encores where you're learning it so fast.
So fast, yeah.
And like last summer I did my first Mama Rose in Gypsy Sacramento. And that was also, you know, one of those parts that everybody kind of wants to get to in their life at some point. And I'm so glad I got to do it, but it was such a quick, you know, process that I barely felt like I knew my lines by the time that week's run was over.
Mm-hmm. So you have like a Goldilocks complex with rehearsals, because you don't want it too drawn out, but you don't want it rushed either.
I don't want to feel like I'm not ready when the show opens. Sure. You know, I do want to feel prepared.
Well, that part obviously also needs so much. I mean, if you've been doing Nancy and Oliver in Sacramento, you might have been, you know, happy with the three weeks or whatever.
That's true. That's true.
I just remember you posting on your Instagram, everyone follow Carolee. You posted clips of rehearsal for Gypsy, and I just remember, like, every morning I would wake up and go to your page and, like, watch the videos of you singing Rose's Turn or whatever, and it was so thrilling.
God, that score. And that show is just such a perfect gem of a show. Like, there's not one ounce of fat on it. I was so excited to get to do that finally.
Yeah. What was your favorite song in Gypsy to sing?
Probably Everything's Coming Up Roses, just because it's so dramatic. And I mean, Rose's Turn is dramatic too, in the sense that, you know, there's so much emotion in it, there's something about having someone to sing to and tell the story to. So at the end of Act One, she's singing to her daughter and Herbie, and, you know, Rose's Turn is sort of this soliloquy, but
it's less of a song.
Yeah, it's sort of a manic
line
breakdown.
Have that kind of like a build. And crescendo.
Yeah. Right. So I think the end of Act One was probably my favorite, because it just felt so satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you sing the shit out of that song, out of that whole score.
It was fun. Totally. I hope I get to do it again someday.
Your voice is so unique. I mean, there's not many voices I think that I would like literally just die to hear you sing a specific song, even just. I just want to satisfy my appetite to, like, know what you would sound like in that song. It's such a, I remember feeling that way when you went into Kiss Me, Kate. It was like, Like, I couldn't get there. I think I might have gone to your first preview.
Oh, my God.
Because it was like...
Another sort of Soprano-y-ish.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you sort of... I mean, it's a combination.
It's
but,
a combination. Yeah. But, well, especially it was a combination when you did it. I mean, you know, when Kelly O'Hara sings it, you wouldn't call it a combination. But you have
true.
All that, you know, that your voice is so, like, meaty in those high
totally.
Parts, you know?
It's interesting because we didn't change any keys, but, you know, I was taking over for Maren. Well, no, I just was going to say that people kept asking me, did they change the keys
yeah.
for you? And I guess, you know, Maren and I just have such different sounds that even though we were singing them in the same keys, mine sounded somehow beltier than hers.
Yeah, which is funny because actually compared to other sopranos, she kind of has that, like, thicker, richer
that
sound.
That mixy,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
yes.
why, like... In, like, Passion, you know, mm-hmm. I never was happy with the other women playing the part, Melissa Errico, whoever. Like, I didn't want to just hear some soprano come in. I mean, I worship Rebecca Luker, but I don't really... Hearing her in Passion isn't that kind of satisfying, you know, thickness of a sound that Maren Mazzei had. But with you, it's in a whole other level. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
literally a belt voice. It's just in that range, you know?
Totally.
Is that, I mean, have you, in all these years now doing that, have you ever had to study to protect that? Have you had any vocal trouble ever? I mean.
Not serious vocal trouble. I mean, you know, every once in a while if I got bronchitis or
sure.
I was,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing double duty, rehearsing one show during the day and doing another show at night, I would, like, get fried. But
mm-hmm.
no, I've never had, like, surgery or had to take 6 months off or
mm-hmm.
anything like that.
I mean, do you have any kind of technique or anything that you use? I mean,
no.
when you're doing, I mean, it's so
do
crazy
I have any
that,
technique? No.
Very Streisand of you.
Listening
is
to,
that true? Is she?
Yeah.
Is she,
what did she say in that? What's a mix? They were like, how did you develop that mix? And she
yeah.
was like, what's a mix?
What's a mix?
Interesting.
And they said, how do you sing the way you do? How do you hold the notes so long? And she said, because I want to. So, you know, you're in good
wow,
company.
Wow, I guess so. I don't think I ever, I didn't obsess watching interviews of Barbara Streisand
well,
either. I need to do that
I've done
now.
The work for you.
Thank you.
Well, what's that thing from the cartoons?
I have watched a few YouTubes of Hello, Dolly, though, now that
ah,
I'm studying.
Yes, the research.
Yes.
The research.
The work.
Well, and did you see Bette Midler do it?
I didn't. I saw Betty Buckley now, so, and I've seen clips of Bette and
right.
Bernadette.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see Carol Channing do it?
Only online. I never
surprised.
Saw it live.
Did you ever do? Were you ever Irene Molloy or anything?
No.
That would seem
well,
like
would
such
be
a
really
natural
nice
part
role for you.
Yeah, too old
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Well, listen. Depends who's playing Dolly.
If Barbara Streisand was playing Dolly, we could.
Exactly. Yeah, you could be Louise if she
yeah.
ever gets around to doing Jessie.
I mean, I guess Irene is a widow, so she could be. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, because when Carol Channing did it in 78,
mm-hmm.
Florence Lacey
was that the last
was,
time?
No, the last time was 94.
Oh, wow.
But Florence Lacey was Irene Molloy both times.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody was,
Flo
you
Lacey.
Know, the whole thing just
yes,
transported.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, she, I would say, almost, I mean, I don't think her voice has quite the, like,
Florence?
I think the top of your voice is prettier than hers, and you
You're
have
talking
a little...
talking about Carol Channing or
no,
Florence?
No, no,
your
no.
Your whole voice is
you
prettier
Carol
than hers.
Channing, I would say, maybe in the comedy department, but not vocally. But Florence Lacey has kind of, I would say, the closest comparison I would have thought, maybe, to your voice. I think you have a little
she
more of like
a
pop
quality. She was in
Evita.
Yeah, she did.
And she has that very kind of just like strong, you know, you just kind of feel like
power.
All her resonance
yes.
just is like.
Yeah. She's got an amazing voice.
Yeah.
And she still sounds great.
Yeah. What's a mix?
What's a mix?
Well, okay, speaking of playing Evita, you played Evita, I know. I think I've even listened to a clip on YouTube. Maybe
For
I found
real?
Something at some point. Maybe I saw a program on eBay. I definitely have had some nerdy, like, stalking Carolee moment of Eurovita. Maybe it was just a visual, but I will find it.
Jeez, I don't know. I mean, that's so long ago, I can't even imagine that there are videos out there. I mean, there might be somebody, you know.
Well, there's videos of the Broadway production, so, I mean,
that's
you know.
True, yeah. But, I mean, this was at a dinner theater up in Westchester, and I really...
That's my dream, to eat and watch you play Evita. Right, right.
That is one of the most amazing roles. I mean, I was actually the matinee Evita. It was... Paige O'Hara was the...
Oh, how funny.
Do you remember Paige? She was the original Belle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she did the nighttime, and I didn't have to be in the ensemble at night. I just came in and did three shows a week.
That was, I think, Nancy Opel's gig for a while in the Broadway production also. Oh, Terry Klausner and then Nancy Opel. Mm-hmm. And I think Florence Lacey, too, at one point. Speaking of Paige O'Hara...
Your knowledge... of musical theater history
encyclopedic. Is... Encyclopedic.
Oh, my God.
It ends in the year 2000.
Does it really?
It's only, like, my high
so
school
So no Dear Evan
obsessing.
Hansen.
I mean, I
no.
love Dear Evan Hansen. I've actually seen it a few times. Like, I mean, I know more than, like, the average Joe. Right. But there's huge things
Gaps.
I just
Gaps.
Don't know. Yeah. But you're...
I'm so impressed.
I remember seeing you in falsettos. And just being, like... Oh, you know what it was? When I saw it on Broadway, I didn't see you. I saw Maureen Moore.
Okay.
And then when you guys did it in L.A. At the Doolittle
Theater.
Right,
that was the original company.
They had like $20 tickets, rush tickets or something. And I was like, I think I was like a junior or senior in high school, and I saw it like five times. And,
was that, were you Trina?
She was Cordelia.
No. You were both,
I never got
you,
to see her,
You
Trina.
Did both, right?
Cordelia I did and Trina. Trina on the road, yes. But that L.A. company was the original Broadway company, so I was playing Cordelia in that. Yeah.
But I just remember thinking like, oh my God, like this is such, you had so much more of a presence as Cordelia. There was something that you brought, I remember so much your laugh as Cordelia. It was like you had a relationship with Mendel, like you would laugh at his jokes. And there was something, I feel like I'm gonna cry. It was like, it brought the family together in this different way. I mean, that was just one way that it was, but it was. In a show that was so much about the creating family and, like, chosen family, you had these relationships in these ways that, you know, the material didn't necessarily require.
Hand
it was
you.
Like that you, yeah, exactly. It didn't hand it to you, you know? And then something like in Unlikely Lovers, just the way that your voice, you know, wrote up on those, what I guess Cordelia sings, though, is it the harmony or just the high melody or what, you know, but you, I just remember you kind of like, on the top of it, just being really, it was just so emotional because it felt so connected to the story and the characters. You know?
I mean, I'm still so sad that we didn't record the Broadway company, but singing Unlikely Lovers every night with Michael and Stephen and Heather, that was like one of the highlights of my life. It's just such a beautiful, I mean, the vocal arrangement, the sentiment, that piece of music is just, you know, unparalleled.
Did you know that show before you did it? Like, had you seen Falsetto Land or anything?
I had seen it, yeah. But, I mean, I didn't know it well. I just had seen it once and was impressed. I had never seen March of the Falsettos, so I didn't really know.
Well, that's before I think you even were in New York, is that right? It's like 81?
It must be. I moved here in 83, so I guess I just missed it.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the production that they did in Connecticut, which was, I think, the first time they put
the
Graziella two pieces.
Oh, Graziella Danielle Durante. Yes. And that's when Barbara Walsh first played Trina.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I was sad that her Trina wasn't recorded.
Yeah, she was great.
But, wait, how did we get onto falsettos? There's definitely some Carolee roles that we need to get deeper into.
So I've seen you perform, I think I saw you at Carnegie Hall in a concert with Cheyenne Jackson and can't remember who the other people were, but you sang Don't Rain on My Parade.
Oh my
gosh.
Which
was fabulous. And then I saw you at Joe's Pub, I think it was Justin Sayers' The Meeting. And you sang 50%. And those
How did
two
I
songs,
miss that?
Yeah. Those
oh, see,
two
look,
songs were like
that, you
epic.
Can do ballroom for another 50 years.
Totally.
You don't have
yeah,
any
all
rush.
Those, all those thousands of productions of ballroom
well,
you've
yeah.
been done.
If anyone offers you ballroom, you say no, you're busy. You'll do that when you're older.
Right.
We don't need you wasting time on ballroom now.
There's plenty of time for ballroom. No, but those two songs were so... Because I love those songs, of course.
Yeah.
And when I, and in both of those instances, you know, whenever I was sitting in my seat and I could feel where you were going, I was like, okay, this is what the song is. I can't believe this is happening. Like, Carolee singing these two belty, well, I guess 50% is not super belty, but it's just such a wonderful song for any actress to sing.
Yeah.
What other
lyrics,
songs?
The lyrics are so
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. What other songs do you like to sing, like, in cabaret setting or...
Well, I don't like to sing in cabaret setting, for one.
Is that working? That looks weird. We have an ongoing... we have.
I've been trying to convince
Carolee to do an album.
Absolutely. I was just
and
looking...
Or an act.
Right.
And she's very resistant to
I've been listening to...
That's mild.
I've been listening to a lot of your stuff, your cast recordings and stuff the last couple days, and I was like, oh, I just wish I had a solo album Carolee's to listen to right now.
I'm sorry, everybody. You know, as you and I have discussed, Ben, my big sort of stumbling block is that I feel like most of those albums are just sort of vanity projects, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really just, I don't know, here's me singing 10 songs, and I don't kind of 14. Understand the point of it.
13, 14.
And I have done concert/cabaret stuff in the past.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I, you know, I'm in between theater gigs, but I just don't enjoy it as much.
Have you done it? I don't think
recently. This past like January, February, I did it like some concerts in California.
Oh, I was like, what is wrong with me?
It wasn't here.
What was it, like a symphony kind of deal?
No,
or?
It was just Phil Reno playing piano, and I did a bunch of songs. Don't Rain on My Parade. Palm Springs and up in the Sacramento sort of area.
Mm-hmm. And did what happened? Somebody just called your agent and you were like, okay, fine, I'll do it?
Kind of. Yeah, I don't pursue it because I just don't enjoy it that much. But it you know, it sometimes is a good filler when I'm mm-hmm. looking for work.
Okay,
and
this
I,
is new information to me. Okay, so what was the set list, for example?
So I did sort of, you know, retrospective on shows mm-hmm. that I sang Nancy from Oliver. I mm-hmm, sang, mm-hmm. you know, As Long As He Needs Me. I sang, let's see... Trying to go through the list. See, I've blocked it out because I don't enjoy
Parade?
It. No, because I don't feel like that. I mean, I love Parade more than almost anything I've ever done in my life, mm-hmm. but I don't think that stuff works in a cabaret setting.
Well, maybe I guess it's a duet is the problem. All the time.
Yeah, I suppose so. That could work, but
Phil Reno can sing, can he?
Actually, I think he did sing that one time with me at some point. The first time I ever did a concert with him, he comes from Ohio and he does like once a year he does a concert in his hometown mm-hmm. and he invites a Broadway person to come and sing. And so he called me and was like, can you put together 50 minutes, you know? So I was like, So we kind of threw together some songs, and I think that was on the list. We actually did All the Waste of Time.
I love.
All the waste of time.
Waste of time.
All the million hours, years on top of years, still too proud to crawl. Are the days gone by to feel that I don't satisfy? And I never knew anything at all. I never knew anything at all.
All the waste of time.
All the waste of time.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Some people love it. And there's something about talking about myself and my own life that is very uncomfortable for me. Mm. I'm much more happy in a wig and a costume and a role where I'm telling a story through somebody else's words.
Did you see Sharonay Scott's show,
Everyday Rapture?
I didn't.
I wonder what you would think of that kind of a project.
But it's also sort of autobiographical, right?
Yeah, but very... Because I think when you and I had talked about it, you had said, well, maybe you would be interested in something like Elaine Stritch at Liberty.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, you know, but that just now, when you said talking about yourself, I was thinking Elaine Stritch at Liberty is still very much talking about yourself.
It's true.
Although I'm finding out more and more how little of it was actually true. But
oh, really?
Well, it was, you know, it was the version she was presenting.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
A book coming out about her. I just read, like, an advanced galley of it. It's
scandalous. Really?
But Sherry's show was through more of a, like, funhouse mirror. I mean, it was based on her life, but it was really...
a theatrical version.
It was very theatrical. And not even, you know... Yeah, not just in terms of changing details or whatever, but, you know, just this, it was so stylized into the Mr. Rogers medley or thing. You know, it was very creative and inventive. And then her other shows she's done since then, like Piece of Meat, was that the one at 54 Below, have been, I mean, if I'm sure they're based on experiences she's had, but they were, you know, essentially fiction.
And she writes them, which is so impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the part of...
Well, she has a good partner, Dick Scanlon. And
yes.
They've got a great relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just saying, Carol.
It's going to happen someday, Ben.
It's going to happen sometime.
Well, the good news is your voice shows zero signs of any aging or wear and tear.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't know if that's true, but thank you for saying that.
I mean, do you feel like, oh, I can't sing this note anyway I used to be able to, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if someone asks me to sing something that, let's say from a show that I did, you know, 20 years ago, and I listen to the recording, I go, oh, wow, I don't know if I can do that anymore. You know, I guess I can still hit the notes, but it's not as easy as it was, you know, like when I was in my 20s. I think it's unavoidable, but I feel pretty healthy so far. And Hello, Dolly coming up doesn't scare me too much. You know, it's not one of those, you know, if I had to dive into, you know, Evita right now, I'd probably be a little nervous, but so far I'm hanging in there.
Well, you've got a good 20 years on all those ladies that have been coming before you in the part, so if they can get through it.
And there's many ways to approach it. I mean, that's the amazing thing I'm learning about Dolly is, like, just so many different approaches to it vocally and different approaches to it comedically. And it still works. You know, the piece is so sort of secure that you can have Pearl Bailey and you can have Bernadette Peters and Donna Murphy and, you know, all these different versions.
I mean, I was so happy that the tour is going on and that you're going into it because I was so sad when it closed. I really had thought, as soon as it was Bernadette, I was like, yes, let's do this. I mean, I just wanted, I was like, somebody call Kristen Chenoweth.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, that's the fun. I mean, that's the whole reason I love Broadway is for that to happen, you know. And it, you know, I guess Scott Rudin just, you know, if it wasn't that kind of Bette Midler money, it wasn't worth his time, you know, or
I
focus.
Think it was an expensive show to run.
Sure.
I think it was hard to make that nut.
But I mean, but you know, it didn't seem like he was willing to, like, try very hard, you know, like it was like, no, we're done. And so, you know, I kind of thought when they had the first set of dates of the tour, that was going to be it. I didn't even get my hopes up. And then when Craig Burns texted me, Top Secret, who's going to Hello Dolly, I was like,
I mean, I remember, you know, when Bette was announced, you know, like a year before Hello Dolly even opened, people were already, you know, chattering about replacements and tour.
Yeah.
And your name came up so many times.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
really?
I would love to see Carol Lee in this role, you know.
Oh, well,
so,
now you can.
Now we're all getting
City,
our dreams
get
coming true. Yeah.
Well, we love to play that game, which I guess is a good segue for our game.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we have a little game that we play on the podcast, which
oh,
you're
my
probably
goodness.
Gonna hate.
Is it a test of my theater
no.
knowledge?
Okay. It's much worse. It's called Dolly Concert Kill. And you're the first Dolly that we're playing.
Ah, what does that mean?
So we give you three. You know the game Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Yes.
So it's kind of like that. We give you three performers. And you choose one that you would like to see as Dolly Levi.
Okay.
One that you would like to see in concert. And one, unfortunately, who you will give the axe.
Oh, that's awful.
Okay, so...
And these are real people?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give the axe... You're right,
you know,
I'm going to hate
we,
it. Okay.
We could do dead people, so she feels...
Well,
okay, that
or,
I don't feel so bad about.
Well, we have a remedial version we've created, if you're too sensitive. We can do Fuck, Marry, Chill. No, sorry, Dolly Concert Chill.
Dolly Concert Hiatus.
One person you just give a vacation.
Okay.
So, I think... Julie Andrews.
Yes, for sure. Julie Andrews. What was the other? Leslie Ann Warren?
Yeah, Leslie Ann Warren and Marnie Nixon.
No, not Marnie Nixon.
Julie Andrews, Leslie Ann Warren, and...
Barbara Cook.
There you go. Perfect.
Oh, look, see, we're in that soprano closet.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
Let's see. Who would I want to see as Dolly Levi? All right, say them again. Barbara Cook, Leslie Ann Warren.
Warren and Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews would be really strange as Dolly Levi.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to have to put her in one of the other categories.
I kind of want to see Leslie a drag queen do Julie Andrews.
Right. It's Victor Victoria Dolly. I guess Leslie Ann Warren, because I think she has a really good sense of comedy.
Yeah, so she's funny.
Yeah. So I'd put her as Dolly, and in concert...
Barbara V. Julie.
This is the classic Broadway soprano debate.
Wow. Gosh.
By the way, the rules of the game, you get to choose. I mean, you don't have to specify, but it's of your choice when concerts. Yeah. You don't have to worry about, her
vocal surgery.
It could be peak.
Whatever era of the performer you want.
Oh, my God. They're both so good, though. I mean, the thing about Barbara Cook was her take on material was so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like Julie...
Did you see her in concert?
No, I didn't. I mean, I've seen things on TV and on YouTube, but I never saw her live.
Yeah.
But I think I would pick her in concert.
Classy choice.
And sorry, Julie.
Sorry, Jules.
But, you know, Julie is one of those people ask me sometimes, like, is there any... person that you like totally fangirled out or freaked out when you met them, and Julie Andrews came to see Finding Neverland.
Oh.
And she was lovely and came backstage and took pictures with everyone and was just so generous. And she was one of like a handful of people in my whole life that I just burst into tears when I started talking to her.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I was like, I can't believe I'm meeting you.
This oh my God.
And then there's this like group picture of all of us, and I have like tears streaming down my face. Some of the younger people in the cast were like, who is she again?
Oh,
no.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a lot of kids in that show.
Oh, kids.
You know?
Oh, kids. Little kids.
Yeah, no, not like the 20-somethings.
Right.
But
Matt Morrison was like,
Excuse me. I'm sorry, who are you? And the other person I totally did that to was I auditioned for, you were talking about Bells Are Ringing before, and I auditioned for the Broadway revival when it happened. And
oh, the Tina Landau one?
Yes. That,
yeah.
And when I went in the room, I didn't realize that, that the writers were going to be there. And I was like, I totally burst
Betty
into tears.
Betty Comden, Nat O'Green?
They were there behind the table. I mean, they weren't really involved, but they were sitting there. And they introduced me to everybody down the line before I sang. And I totally burst into tears. I was like, I can't believe that you're here. It was embarrassing.
Why were they such stars to you?
I think because I had already done the show in L.A., and I just knew how brilliant it was. Mm-hmm. I just was such a fan of the show, and I just thought the writing was so, perfect to me that... they were rock stars. I don't know.
Oh, I love it.
See, she purports not to be a musical theater nerd, but she's fangirling over Comden and Green.
I wasn't when I was young. Maybe if I'd been exposed to Comden and Green when I was a teenager, it would have been a different story.
Right,
but
sure.
I think, I didn't know Bells Are Ringing until I...
Yeah, well, I mean, none of us did, right?
Yeah.
That's, like, not... although, I guess I've never seen it, but there's a movie with Judy Holliday. Like,
oh, it's
from
great.
The era. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, all right, we're watching that. That might be a good Fire Island Film Festival.
It's really good. It's really good.
Well, we have Carolee. How can we... I'm sure there's a million more questions we want to ask her, but she's given us...
Well, so you have a wonderful social media presence. I follow you on Twitter, Instagram.
Yes, she's Carolee Carmelo everywhere. One L in Carolee, two in Carmelo.
Right, thank you.
Right. And then upcoming dates, anything to plug?
Well, the national tour of Hello Dolly.
Well, Hello Dolly.
Absolutely.
So I'm starting.
What city?
Well, they're out now, but I joined the tour in Kansas City at the end of September. And then we'll be in the Midwest for a while. I think the farthest west we get is Tucson.
Okay.
And then, like, down to Naples, Florida, and up to Hartford, Connecticut, and Philadelphia.
When was the last time you did a tour?
Before my kids were born.
Wow.
So, yeah, like 25 years ago. My son is 18. Okay. My daughter is 23. Yes, 23. And, yeah, so this will be a very different experience than the tour I did when I was in
my
20s.
Right, right. Well, and now, what was the last tour? Was it chess? No.
I guess falsettos, probably.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Was that wasn't a big tour, was it?
It was pretty big.
Really?
Yeah, I did two different tours of it. With, yeah, so I think, yeah, it was like week stops, yeah, around the country. Yeah, it was interesting to play that show around the country.
I just saw the recent tour when it was in L.A.
Yeah. Well, L.A. is not so...
Yeah, well, I think this one only did a few. It was only like 6 months, maybe, or something. But I was like, well, you can answer this. Like, what is it like? Because even in L.A., where it was at the Amundsen, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I miss the Walter Kerr. This is like too big.
Yes,
that
works.
That's an intimate theater compared to some of those roadhouses that they would be in.
True.
You know?
Yeah, it was. Well, we didn't play huge houses, but it is much harder to play a show like that on the road because the intimacy is so important in that show.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, when the show had just opened on Broadway, and we went to the you know, hinterlands to play that show. It was not like, I'm sure, what you saw in L.A. I mean, the audiences were kind of shocked. I remember we played Florida. I forget which city it was now, if it was Miami or Fort Lauderdale. But it was, you know, people were walking out.
Mm.
And I remember when the lights came up on, you know, Whizzer and Marvin in bed, we heard from the back of the theater, "Oi, again with the boys."
I mean,
it wasn't always so accepted, but it was important to do, but it was hard, you know.
Was that something like working in theater, like as like a straight woman, like coming from like Albany, like were you surprised or, you know, was that a culture shock for you coming into this like super gay world, like when you were first in the city?
I don't remember being shocked.
I mean, I guess community theater probably is pretty gay.
I don't remember a lot of exposure, but you know, before I moved to New York, but I also don't remember being particularly like, you know, thrown by any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I enjoyed the variety of people and, different backgrounds and different colors and shapes and sexual preferences.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I still love about theater, that it just appeals to so many different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a feeling of like open arms that, mm-hmm. that the theater community embraces people who maybe are not so embraced in other parts of the world. I think
this
that's
feels
amazing.
Very Dolly Levi right now.
Does it?
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Totally. Not acquaintances, friends.
Exactly. You know my lines better than I do.
You better learn them. There's probably
a lot of
guys in those audiences that know it.
I'm working hard right now. Yes, my late husband, Ephraim Levi, always... loved life wherever you found it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Carolee, we love you.
We love you, Carolee.
Oh,
you're
I love you guys.
We're so grateful to you. This is so much fun. And
we can't wait to see you in Dolly.
Yes. We'll have to do a live blog.
Right. Yeah.
From intermission. She just sang before the brain bounces by. We're dying.
Well, thank you for for being such, you know, amazing encyclopedic brains and for... just making me feel good about what I've done in my career.
Well,
you guys
you
are lovely.
Us feel good
we
with
thank
what you.
Oh. Decades of goosebumps.
Thank
totally.
You so much.
Yay! Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week as we begin our special Winter in a Summer Town mini-season featuring the most fabulous talents from Provincetown and Fire Island.
First up, Tony Award winner Faith Prince coming in to talk about Liza with a Z.
And after Faith, we'll be chatting with Pixie Aventura, Varla Jean Merman, Linda Etter, and Miss Richfield 1981. This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
It's Nolan with an A, isn't it?
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.